Okay, well, I'm going to start this this evening's FAQ, which is the 10 Desert Island Books for Socialists. You might wonder, what's the point of this question? Well, we touched on this subject not very long ago in another FAQ, but it was only sort of tangentially, really. And it struck me that it was a topic worth discussing in its own right. There could actually be a concrete outcome as well, because, we could put a list of, you know, our all-time favourite books on our website. Why not? Because at the moment, you know, the website hasn't really got much to offer today's young workers, particularly who are not particularly turned on by the idea of, you know, wading through a century of old standards and, various obscure turgid tomes from 1911. A list of recommended, books and novels might actually be quite a good idea. I probably should have said novels rather than books in the original blurb, as it seems that apparently 80% of novels are read by women, which presumably means that men seem to like reading non-fiction. I certainly like reading non-fiction too. Non-fiction gives you the unvarnished facts. But fiction can often sort of inspire flights of fancy and visions and imagination. So what I thought I'd do is I'll start by offering my top 10, if you like, an eclectic mix. And because I'm the one introducing this, I get to cheat, and I'm going to steal the easy ones, the obvious titles, so that the rest of you have just got to work harder. Okay, so I'm going to start with a supremely obvious one, which is News from Nowhere. This is an antiquated book. It's soaked in Thomas Hardy's style, bucolic nostalgia. It's absolutely leaden with tell-not-show exposition, which any decent writer really would have cut out. In the story, bin men dress like emperors for fun, but the women are all mysteriously still in the kitchen. Allegedly, according to what I've read, because William Morris asked all his female friends and they all said they would prefer it. Anyway, it's a socialist novel that someone was bound to write sooner or later, and I suppose Morris did pretty well not to completely murder the subject. I've certainly seen the subject tackled by other less skilled hands who've made an absolute travesty of it. But still and all, this book isn't anywhere near as good as Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee at the Court of King Arthur, and it kind of makes you wish Mark Twain had been a bit more of a socialist. Second book, Ragged Trouser Philanthropists, again going with the obvious. This is a great book until this dreadful pro-Labour speech right at the end, which bangs on about reformism for an entire chapter. I did read that, however, I don't know whether you'd call this a conspiracy theory exactly, but suspicions remain that the manuscript was nobbled after Robert Noonan's death by its first editor, who was one Jesse Pope, who was also a prominent activist in First World War's White Flower movement. And so she was about as anti-socialist as it was possible to get. Word has it that Jesse Pope was the target and inspiration of Wilfred Owen's famous poem Dulce et Decorum Est. Okay, so third book, The Dispossessed. We talked about this recently. Capitalism on a Planet, Anarchism on its Moon. The perfect setup for comparison purposes, which Ursula Le Guin exploits quite ingeniously. The anarchism is a bit hair shirt and shoestring for most people's taste. But the sense of community and the freedom of thought that the anarchist moon enjoys seems to make up for the lack of Mediterranean salad vegetables. Then we go on to another book we've discussed recently, Woman on the Edge of Time. This is a different take on anarcho-socialism, under siege this time, and with protagonists who've tried to solve gender politics by all basically merging into one gender, which might very well take a lot of the fun out of it. It's all in the mind of the inmate of a mental hospital, which rather begs the question, is socialism a real thing, or are we all just bonkers? Fifth choice, the Communist Manifesto. This is because it's an easy, quick read, and then you can say you've read some Marx. It's full of ringing phrases, some of them bollocks, which serve as proof that Marx was a far more entertaining writer when he'd pumped up the rhetorical bellows than when he was boring the arse off us with economics. Next one, the Peter Principle. Lawrence J. Peter's hilarious exposition of his own rule that each employee tends to rise to their level of incompetence. This contains but doesn't explore the clear implication that all hierarchies, such as you find in capitalism, are led and mostly populated by buffoons. You've only got to look at the current Tory government, and in fact most governments. This is the man who invented the term Jobsworth, and I think this book ought to be studied at length by anyone who still believes that leaders know what they're doing and have everything under control. And this leads me almost irresistibly to my seventh choice, which is the Complete Scripts of Yes Minister. Same thing, really, as above. This ought to be required reading, or watching, for anyone who believes anything any government ever says about anything. It's got so many priceless quotes in it, there's just nowhere to start. I could talk for hours, as I think I probably do know all of it by heart. Number eight, going a bit more serious and philosophical, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. This is one of those formative hippie books that people probably don't read anymore because it's too long. And it warns you not to live by simplistic Aristotelian binary logic, and explores instead the much more textured subtleties of the sophists. What it doesn't do is teach you a single sodding thing about how to fix your motorbike, but it does suggest quite helpfully that you should find the gumption to lift the engine cover and have a look for yourself, because you never know, the solution might be obvious. If it's not, buy a Haynes manual. How is this useful for socialists? Well, I think we could all do with the gumption to lift the lid on society and look for things that are obvious. Number nine, Carl Sagan, Cosmos. This is an iconic scientist, an iconic book, in the sense of a benchmark that other scientists look up to. I think really if I had to, I would keep this book and chuck out all the others, because it elevates science almost to the level of poetry, and it fills you with a wonder at the unknown and a love of discovery that's suffused human experience right through the centuries and will continue to do so in socialism. And number 10, as a little indulgence, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, a bagatelle of a book, but also a pure and poetic paean to liberty that stays with you forever. Because when you take all the detail away and all the history and the rationale and the narrative away from the socialist ethic, you're left with a simple, distilled sense of freedom in its most elemental form. And it turns out to be a bloody seagull. So those are the 10 that I came up with, although I'm sure that I've forgotten a lot of much better examples. Apparently people are reading much more during the pandemic, so now would be a good time for us to make some recommendations. So how about somebody making a suggestion to kick off for books that socialists or proto-socialists ought to be reading, and why? Okay, over to you.
A criticism first, Paddy. I thought you said fiction. How is the Communist Manifesto and possibly the Peter Principle fiction?
I said non-fiction and fiction. I didn't make it very clear in the original.
Oh, right.
I apologize.
You said both. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. I didn't get that right.
That's Paul here, guys. Very thoroughly impressive selection there. I would expect it less from you, Paddy. And to my shame, quite a few of them I'd never even heard of, so certainly getting a list up would be really helpful. And of course, you did mention one or two there that I would have already chosen too. I would probably like to mention one of my favourites, based on the life of Karl Marx, written by Francis Wien, just simply titled Karl Marx. And I think what I particularly like that about that story is, although it does mention quite a lot about his politics for obvious reasons. You couldn't mention Karl Marx and not include his political beliefs. But what I really like about it is the reality of the man, his existence, his life at the time, the whole sort of family values and such like that he liked. So I would certainly mention that one, as I say, just Karl Marx by Francis Wien, for anyone that hasn't had the pleasure yet. And probably, again, the whole sort of real life, I particularly enjoy. I'm a huge favourite of reading biographies and such like. So I think the second one I would mention would have been our very own Heather Ball. And this was a book that I took on holiday with me many years ago and read it. And it's this series of short stories. I can't remember. I can't remember what the title of it was. Was it just My Life as a Socialist? Someone can maybe correct me with that. But it was basically Heather's version of some real life events that led her to becoming a socialist. And I think I'm right in saying that they also appeared in the Standard and then were various sections of the Standard. I understand she was a prolific writer for the Standard, and then they became published into a book. I think it might even be out of print at the moment, but if anyone can lay their hands on that, that really, really wets, you know, gets your juices flowing. I think it's an absolutely terrific book, and it's written from the heart. You can clearly, there's no doubt that she was passionate about the life that she led as a socialist and what led her to becoming a socialist, which are things, and getting back to the Karl Marx side of things too. It's what makes people tick that I really like to read about. So that'd be the two. Karl Marx by Francis Wien and her very own Heather Ball's series of collection of short stories from the Standard. So that's plus, you know, several of the other ones that you mentioned, The Ragged Trousers Philanthropist, News from Nowhere, all absolute classics. Must reads if you haven't read them. Cheers.
The title of Heather Ball's book is A Socialist Life.
Socialist Life. Yes, thanks for that, Howard. Thanks, mate. Yeah, good man. Yeah, Socialist Life. Cheers, appreciated.
Paddy, just got to apologise to Nicola. I've had to mute background noise. If you can mute yourself, please, Nicola, and then I can take this. I'll take this system mute off. I'll do it now. That's it. Sorry, I just had to put it back on.
Maybe message her, Steve, to see.
I'll try that. I'll try that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of good suggestions from Paul. I must say I did enjoy that Francis Wien biography, although I can't remember him across that.
There has, Paddy. It's called the Frock-Coated Communist, and I'm glad that you prompted me to say that there, because that was the other ones that I had in my fading memory mind, A Frock-Coated Communist.
Okay.
And I think it was written by an old lady. What's his name? I think it's the chap that went to take over at the Royal Albert Victoria Museum. Whatever his name is. It's a terrific read, though, you know, a very, very good read. Thoroughly recommend that to A Frock-Coated Communist.
Okay, thanks for that one. Yeah.
He'd been a Labour MP, hadn't he? He'd been a Labour MP and he resigned.
Yeah.
What was his name? Anyone remember his name?
Keir, I don't know. He's quite a prominent Labour MP. It took everyone by surprise when he decided to call it a day with Labour, because he was sort of climbing up that greasy pole, and then apparently this opportunity came along to take over as the head honcho at the Royal Albert Museum. But it's well written. I think I've got those facts right there. I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Was it Tristram Hunt?
Yeah. It was, wasn't it? That's correct. Yeah, totally. I'm sure it was him.
That's not me being clever. That's just me Googling quite fast.
Yeah, and so that being the case, have I got that right? Was it him that wrote it? Have you got that in handy?
I've just Googled it.
Yeah, right, and so that was right. Yeah, yeah. So I've just Frock-Coated Communist, pretty well written, and you know, nothing too sort of, you know, written, how shall I say, from a fairly kind of non-biased kind of perspective, I would say, you know, and a lot of fact. And there's a lot of overlaps in it, because obviously Engels and Marx spent so much of their time together. There's a lot of overlap between Francis Wien's biography and this one on Engels. You know, there's a lot of things that marry up. So very, very well written and factually accurate as well.
Yeah, so it occurs to me something that we mentioned to Heather Ball, and it occurs to me that there was a sort of proviso that I should have made at the start, which I didn't. So apologies for that. Which was that I was going to sort of choose to avoid recommending books and things by party members, because I know that quite a lot of party members in the past have written books. So I didn't want to sort of imply by just maybe picking one or two that, you know, the others weren't worth looking at. So I thought it best kind of diplomatically to eschew the subject. But I would say that, you know, the books that have been written by party members, some of them academic, you know, I think are definitely worth.
Yeah, totally agree with that.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi. I'd like to mention New Grub Street by George Gissing. I don't know if anybody's read it.
No.
It's absolutely tragic. It's a completely sort of damning indictment of capitalism and how it crushes the human spirit and creativity. It's not an easy read, but it's very compelling. That would be one of my recommendations anyway.
Okay. Do you have any more, any kind of upbeat suggestions?
God, I'll try and think of them.
There's a few books I'd recommend. There's one, a biography of Markov by Israel Getzler or whatever. And there's also a biography of Rosa Luxemburg by, I think it was somebody called Nettles or whatever. And they're quite good. And there's a biography of Eleanor Marx that is very good, written by a woman. I forget Yvonne, somebody or other, I think. But nobody's mentioned George Orwell. I think some of his books are worth mentioning, Down and Out in Paris and London or whatever, and The Road to Wigan Pier. I think they're quite interesting, really. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I mean, I didn't really think of that. I've read loads of Orwell. But I don't know. I didn't really get any sense that George Orwell's particularly constructive from a socialist point of view.
I find Homage to Catalonia very good, Ray, and they made that film Land and Freedom based on Homage to Catalonia, and it's quite an inspiring film, really, you know, about the Spanish Civil War. Right?
I thought it was a bit depressing when he's an old bloke and he dies in the ambulance, and no one even remembers what the war was about.
I know.
But our point of view, we actually opposed the getting involved in that.
It's quite interesting to read about the anarchists and Poom and Venture and what happened. Right? It was quite an interesting time. A lot of people from the ILP, it was about 25 members of the ILP, went off to fight for the Republic. So it was quite interesting to read about it. Yeah,
I suppose so, in a sort of general historical way. I think what I had in mind was sort of, you know, books that, you know, we in particular would recommend that would a perspective that we could sort of identify with. Don't know. Anyone else?
I've got one completely off the scale for most people, I thought. It's a thing called Things by Georges Perec. It was written in 1965, and it's... I don't know, maybe some other people have come across it. I believe there's a translation of it, and it's all about the vacuity of urban life and the chase after goods and things like that. It's an extremely effective book, but it doesn't mention politics. It's about the hollowness of modern day life. So that's Georges Perec, and that's Perec.
Is he the one that did Life a User's Manual?
Yes.
Yeah, I had to read that. I found it unreadable, but that's just me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he did. I mean, it's very, very... the thing is, I found it unreadable, actually. But then that may just be me. Just a point of interest. Must be about 1975, I came across the Ragged Trouser Philanthropists. And I'm sure most people here tonight know that it's about the building industry, about painters and decorators in particular. And the author was actually, he was actually a sign writer, but he gained his livelihood by painting. What struck me is my brother was a bricklayer, and he was a member of, he was a shop steward for UCAT. And I just mentioned it to him. He said, you know, everybody in building trade, I'm talking like 1970s, everybody in building trade knows that book. Presumably he was exaggerating a bit, but if my brother said everybody knows it, that must mean that a lot of people that he came across at work was familiar with. He said that he used to get passed around as well. So, yeah, right. That's, unfortunately, that is a bit, I find that slightly turgid as a read. But anyway, so yeah, it's something that was dead popular. And if you younger listeners might not, won't know, but they actually did a television adaptation of this in the 70s, live late 60s or early 70s. Which went down very well, I believe.
I don't know if anybody has read Capital, not by Marx, but by John Lanchester, which came out in, I think, something like 2007. It's a novel which was actually serialised on TV. I didn't see the serial on TV. Apparently, it was nothing like as good as the book. The book is brilliant, and it's about largely about a couple or several families who live in a posh area of North London, and they're earning lots and lots of money until various things happen that mean they're earning quite a lot less money, and they have to adjust their lifestyles and find it pretty impossible. There's a brilliant scene where there is one, the main character in the book, I think he was played by Toby Jones in the TV serial, whose wife is sort of insatiable for money, that is, and he's expecting a huge bonus from the city firm he works for, and is well over $1 million, and it's all already spoken for in yachts and various other things. And there's a brilliant scene where he goes in on the morning the bonuses are being announced, and the boss calls him into his office and says, things haven't been as good as we thought. We were expecting that the bonuses would be bigger than they are, but unfortunately, in the circumstances, we can offer you £15,000. His wife is even less pleased than he is, threatens to divorce him, et cetera, et cetera. A brilliant book about what capitalism does to people's psychology. If no one else is speaking, I'll mention one other, and then I'll...
Howard, can I be heard?
Can you be heard? Yes, certainly, yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to add something to what you were saying, that one of the funniest bits of that episode you were talking about is when, before he goes to have the meeting with his boss, he's sort of... the amount that he expects to get is growing in his head. He starts off thinking, it might be $1 million, and it's probably going to be $2 million, and it gets bigger and bigger. Do you remember? And he's planning all the things that they're going to do with this money. So he's actually sort of built himself up so much that when the actual blow comes, it's even more devastating.
I had an experience like that once in a job where I offered to take on another piece of work that effectively doubled my workload. And I said to the bosses, I do think that you ought to consider a bit of a pay rise, considering I'm doubling my workload. And he said, yes, come talk to me. And I did exactly the same thing. I thought, oh, he's going to double my money. He's going to give me this. In the end, I got £1 an hour extra.
Serves you right.
Quite right, too.
Right, sure.
Lick spittle of the capitalist classes that I was.
Right, I'll just mention one other. An old party member who died many years ago, but who I knew because in his later years he moved to Swansea, where I live. He was called Bob Ambridge. Wasn't much of a fiction reader, but there was one book he always recommended called, and I'm sure, I'm pretty sure certain nobody will have heard of this, called Yama the Pit, Y-A-M-A, Yama the Pit, by a Russian writer called Alexandra Kuprin, K-U-P-R-I-N. And when Bob died, I inherited various of his books, including this one. And it's a curious book. It was written in the second decade of the 20th century in Russia. And when I sort of came to look at it, I was really surprised because I wouldn't have expected a book like this would be one of Bob's favourites. I thought Bob's favourite book was Capital. But anyway, it was a book about prostitution in Russia, largely about that anyway, in the second decade of the 20th century. And the writer was absolutely appalled by it, by the whole phenomenon, and wrote this book about the awful life that prostitutes had in that society. And there's a sort of little bit in the foreword by the author. The actual final version never saw the light of day in Russian at the time because it was censored. It actually saw the light of day in its original version, in the author's own version, actually in English. But anyway, in the foreword, the author says, "I, as much as I could, have truthfully pointed out the horrors of prostitution, but my work saw the light of day in a far from perfect state. A supersensitive, captious, hypocritical Russian censorship mutilated it until it was unrecognizable. A touchy public became frightened at it. Thousands of abusive, for the most part anonymous letters did I receive in Russia, and still receive them now and then. I was accused of shaking the foundations of society, of corrupting youth, of pornography, etc. Many refused to understand my sincerely well-meant intentions. The first friendly, encouraging letters I received from elderly, the first friendly, encouraging letters I received from elderly, brainy, worldly wise women, from honest youths who were horrified by their sexual longing, and even from young girls. I also treasure several letters from professional prostitutes. These latter epistles sin against grammar, but their contents are profound and touching." And the book's pretty profound and touching and beautifully written as well. That's Yama, Y-A-M-A, The Pit by Alexandra Kuprin.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right, I wasn't sure of my mouse. Can I recommend a couple of American writers, a couple of American novelists? The first one's a crime writer called Ian Levison, and he's maybe published like 4 or 5 novels in the last maybe 20 years. His first book actually was nonfiction. It was called Working Stiff's Manifesto, a memoir of 30 jobs I quit, 9. And 9, one I quit, 9 that fired me, which was just about, it was published at the start of the 20th century, and it was about basically him basically being this overly educated, underqualified graduate who basically had to take on these like precariat jobs. And he's really sort of just, he doesn't describe himself as a socialist by any means, but he does acknowledge that he wants to write about capitalism and just the realities of capitalism. And, you know, that's probably his most successful book in terms of, like, reprints, and you'll see it knocking around and second-hand bookshops. But he then went on to write 4 or 5 novels, crime fiction. One's called How to Rob an Armored Car. Another one's called Since the Layoffs. And basically the theme of these books is basically these guys. It's just about these guys like living in rust belts, like no jobs, no prospects, and what happens to them as a consequence.
I'll post links. I'm really not selling this particularly well, unfortunately, but the really funny political writer with a small p, you know, as I say, he doesn't consider himself a socialist. And the second writer I'd like to recommend is an American writer called Willie Valutin, who's also a musician. Surname's spelled V-L-A-U-T-I-N. And again, he's another writer who's political with a small p because he kind of writes about these kind of like very mundane working class lives. You know, they're not completely grim, but there's a sort of realism to them that you don't really get a lot in American fiction, in my experience. And two of his books that I've read, Lean on Pete and Motel Life, probably two of the best novels I've read in the last sort of 10, 15 years. Again, I guess to give a sense of his writing, it's kind of similar to like Raymond Carver, Ann Tyler, writers like that, just sort of detailing the sort of minutiae of life, but by doing that kind of reveals like a wider sense of how society is. Just really two good writers, Ian Levison and Willie Valutin. I'll post links for both of them in the queue. Cheers.
Can I put my mind through?
Yeah, please. Yeah, do.
Well, I'd go for John Steinbeck in Dubious Battle about fruit pickers in the 30s, an American writer. I'd also go for Ron Cook, Yes, Utopia. We have the technology. I wish I had. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can, yeah.
What's his name? Engels, The Conditions of the Working Class in England. And slightly off topic, but part of it. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we can still hear you, Jacqueline.
Sorry, because I keep blanking out here. What's her name? Rachel Carson. I think it's Rachel Carson, Silent Spring, which I think is a devastating attack on capitalism on the environment side. And the other one is, did I say Ron Cook? Yes, Utopia.
Yeah,
and
you did.
And Samuel Leight, Against Reformism, The Case Against Reformism. And someone called Philip Green, I think his name was Philip, but it's definitely Green, about Engels, an absolutely superb page turner. Those are my ones.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jacqueline.
You're welcome. Very good conversation, this.
That was a lovely bit.
Ron Cook, of course, was a long-standing pastor who sadly died. Several years ago. Sorry, I'm echoing now. For some
Jacqueline, can you just mute your thing? Yeah, thank you. That's it.
Okay. Who died several years ago and wrote, it's very well written. It's The Case for Socialism. Calls it Yes, Utopia. Very, very well written as well. Extremely readable. I'd strongly recommend that too. Yes. Yeah, that's a good one, Jacqueline. Yeah.
Just to mention, Jacqueline, the Engels book is John Green. It's called A Revolutionary Life. Yeah, I like that too. Unfortunately, he's rather keen on Che Guevara and likes to liken Engels to Che Guevara. But apart from that, it's a really good book.
Yeah, really, really excellent choice there, Jacqueline, I have to say. Janet was applauding you. I'd like to add as well, if we...
My head is big enough.
whether we're socialists or not, on that, if we're going to be on a desert island, I think in order to survive long enough for all this reading we're going to want to be doing, perhaps Lofty Wiseman's book, The SES Survival Guide, should be one of them as well.
Okay, I've got a book that I recommend to pretty much everyone that I come across, whether they're socialists or not. It's called The Forest People. It's by Colin Turnbull. It's probably the book that I've actually enjoyed more than any other repeatedly through many years. It's written by a young anthropologist who by chance comes across a group of hunter-gatherers in the Congo, in the DRC, goes down to study them. And he's written up this ethnography of the Mobutu people, and who are immediate return hunter-gatherers, egalitarian, probably have been living in the DRC, according to genetic analysis, for about 20,000 years, who live without property, who live without leaders of any kind, and it's just their story. And it's one of the most wonderfully written books I've ever read. It's completely heartwarming, apart from anything else. I mean, it really kind of, for me at any rate, it sort of restores my faith in human beings. On a completely different note, two books that I like, they're pretty hard going nowadays, classics by Upton Sinclair, The Jungle and King Cole, not for the faint-hearted, but, you know, if you want a searing indictment of capitalism, I think those are two things to go for.
I'm just going to jump in and say completely agree with you there, Richard. I bought this The Forest People about 2 months ago on your recommendation. It's absolutely fabulous antidote for the nonsense that we told all the time about what human beings are like. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And also, I was going to mention The Jungle before, which is about working conditions in the Chicago meat industry, isn't it, Hud? Isn't it? And it's really quite an exciting read. To be honest, when the stuff that you mentioned, Paddy, I found like a couple of things I thought really turgid. This idea of recommending to somebody go and read News from Nowhere or Marge Piercy. I mean, I read Piercy's work. It's years since I read Morris, but I read Piercy's work about three months ago for a meeting in Manchester, and I found it one of the most turgid, absolutely well intentioned. But the most turgid read I've ever come across, absolutely stilted. And except for one thing, that she dreamt up this character who is a woman who is stuck in capitalism and is an absolute. She's been turned into an absolute monster. And I don't know how many of you have read it, but I've got a feeling that. It puts me in mind of the images for this Love Island or Big Brother or things like that. No, I'm going to tell you, I don't get to see it, but you do see the publicity. And these people that go on there remind me extremely of this poor, degenerate woman in Pierce's description of some horrible capitalist dystopia.
Go on.
The Upton Sinclair books, The Jungle, etc., which Richard and Steve mentioned, they were written about in the Standard a number of, not that long ago, by a member of my branch, Steve Trott. Very good article indeed about them. If anyone's interested in that, I would say sort of probably 8 or 9 years ago. It would if one looked on the website, I'm sure one would find it either under Upton Sinclair or the author's name, Steve Trott. Sorry, Paddy. Go on.
No, I was only going to say, it's a funny thing, isn't it? What one person finds readable, another person finds turgid. And I can remember some of the books I recommended, I read in my 20s when I seemed to have a lot more patience with books than I do nowadays. I can remember reading things like Norman Mailer in my teens that I just don't think I'd be able to wade through nowadays. I think the way to judge a book is what it leaves you with afterwards. Certainly. So if some books are too hard to get through, you're not going to read them. But it's different strokes for different folks, really, isn't it?
Quite a few of the books that have been mentioned so far have also been made into some pretty good plays and movies as well, including News from Nowhere. I think that Tim Pigott Smith. That was Once Upon a Time available, the full movie on YouTube. It's since been taken down. I was searching frantically for it to suggest a possible Friday night viewing, but it was very, very good. If we can maybe try and source it by some other means. And what are the ones? Ragged Trouser Philanthropist. And me, Ragged Trouser Philanthropist. That too has been made into a good film. Animal Farm, George Orwell. There's a cartoon version of that. Both, there's a couple, one aimed at children's and the other at adults. So quite a few of the ones that are mentioned, which sort of leads me into thinking that it'd be maybe a good subject matter for a future one, and that would be films that we've seen that have influenced us and that we could recommend too, with a sort of socialist leaning, or certainly something of interest to socialists. But that was just something that passed through my head there when we were talking.
Yeah, thank you. That's actually not a bad idea at all, Paul. But instead of my 10 favourite books, I'd probably pick 50.
I know that one that springs to my mind, I suppose it is a bit of a slant on society. One of my favourite films that came from a book, and with one of my favourite actors, and that was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's Stephen. I can't even remember who wrote it. I think it was Stephen King, wasn't it? But that was another absolute classic. Not particularly, well, obviously made many statements, but I don't think it was ever intended as a political focus. But I thought that was an absolute terrific book for the non-fiction, or for the fictional topic, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, another absolute belter.
I think it was Ken Kesey that wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, that's right.
That's correct. Absolutely, totally. No, I was thinking, it was getting confused with my favourite actor. I'm thinking about films like Misery, which was a cracker, and what was the one set up in the Jack Nicholson again, anyway, where he was the caretaker of the big mansion, and he sort of slowly went off his rocker, and that was another absolute cracker with Jack Nicholson.
The Shining. Yeah. Oh, actually, if you like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, there's some channel or other is serialising the story of Nurse Ratched at the moment, so you might be interested in that.
Yes, indeed.
My daughter's watching it. She says it's very good.
Ah, right. Oh, I'll certainly check that out, because I know Ewan McGregor, they re-released Shining as they're doing, and it was the story of a modern version. I think it was just out last year. Ewan McGregor was in it, and it was the story of the young lad from The Shining who grew up, and he still obviously had these kind of kinetic powers and stuff. But anyway, we are starting to wander, sorry. Cheers.
I quite like Sebastian Fox as an author. I'm not sure about anything. But Birdsong's quite good about the First World War or whatever. You know, people digging sort of mines and trying to blow the Germans up, and the Germans trying to blow the British up or whatever. It's quite a harrowing description of what went on in the First World War or whatever, Birdsong or whatever.
I've got a book in front of me called Team Human, written by Douglas Rushkoff. Very good read. It was written in 2019, although that author has written several books on a similar theme before. I thought I'd reviewed it in the Standard, but I've looked and can't find the review for some reason. But anyway, I used it as the introduction to a talk, which I think it was one of the summer school talks I gave. Must have been last year, not this year. And it sort of does what it says on the tin, really, Team Human. The sort of summary on the front page says, are technologies, markets and cultural institutions once forces for human connection and expression, now isolate and repress us? It's time to remake society together, not as individual players, but as the team we actually are. And basically, it argues that human nature is cooperative, associative, and that's what that's what we should, and we should aim to use that, the ability to associate, to be cooperative in the way we organise society in the future. Gets a bit reformist towards the end, I have to say, but unfortunately they usually do.
As a slight aside, given what we learned about the other day, that the government are intending to ban anti-capitalist literature or materials in schools, what do people do?
I've got an interesting book which I go back to from time to time.
Hang on a minute, Richard.
Anyone who is interested in Marx himself. It's a two-volume work. It's quite an old...
You've interrupted, Rich. I think Steve was talking.
Sorry?
Yeah, I was.
I can't hear anybody. Somebody was talking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, me. can you just give us a minute then, Richard? I've slightly lost my track. But right, yeah. So given what they're saying about anti-capitalist materials should be banned from schools, what about the Lord of the Flies? I mean, I was taught this as a 13-year-old in school.
We can't hear anybody talking.
Oh, sorry. Well, is that it?
I think most of us can hear you, Steve.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I was taught this at school, and it was supposedly a really
can't hear a thing.
Right.
Okay, this is
right, I'll let Richard speak then.
Richard, do you want to speak now? Hello? Some of us can't hear other people. It's a bit weird.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know who else can.
Okay. I'm sorry if I was talking over... Oh, that's great. Sorry if I was talking over you, Steve. I couldn't hear anything coming through, so I just went for it. I was just going to say, there's if anybody is actually interested in if anyone really has to debate with Leninists, a really interesting book that I've always found, this guy called Richard Hunt. He wrote a book called The Political Ideas of Marx and Engels. It's really quite well written. It came out in two volumes. The first volume is available. The second volume you can get on online for about 153 quid or so. Actually download it for free. And what it is, it's a detailed examination of Marx's political history right from his earliest days, in which he shows right from the very beginning that Marx was fundamentally committed to human freedom. Right throughout, right from the beginning of his life, right through to the end, in various ways and in various forms. But that was an abiding concerned with him. So I've actually found it myself useful when talking to Leninists and authoritarian socialists, if we want to call them that. Richard Hunt, The Political Ideas of Marx and Engels.
I should point out that I'm making a note of all of these, so if anybody's busily trying to scribble down names and titles, don't worry, because I think I've got... I'm sorry if people can't... Not everybody can hear. I don't know what the problem is with that. It might be just better to... If you just sort of log out briefly and then log back in, that might possibly fix it.
Can I recommend some kind of self-indulgent fiction? People hear me?
Yeah.
It's this stuff is really old, but hopefully can turn up. There's a really excellent short story by George Bernard Shaw, which I actually scanned in and put on the net, from 1905, called The Death of an Old Revolutionary. And I guarantee that if you read it, you'd recognize the party in it. It's a really, really funny piss take of impossibilists, which we obviously are part of that tradition. I can post the link. I think I ended up sending it to the Marxist Internet Archive, so it should be on their website, but it's on my blog as well. I scanned it in from a selection of short stories from the 30s, which was published that I found. It's really, really funny, painfully funny at times. There's a book from the 40s. I think there's a copy in the party library called The Return of Karl Marx. And it's a very funny story about basically Karl Marx waking up in London during the Blitz. Doesn't explain why he's reanimated. And he decides to go to all these political meetings in his name in the 40s. A very short book, it's like a novella, by a guy called a New Zealand anarchist called Grey Lynn. And there's actually, there's definitely, the party's definitely in the book, though it's not mentioned by name, because basically Karl Marx turns up to an SPG meeting in Conway Hall, and they basically turn around and tell him, well, you don't actually understand the Marxist case. You know, it's a very, very funny book. The Return of Karl Marx by Grey Lynn. I don't know if it's online as a download. I mean, I you know it's from the 40s, but it's very funny. And there's another one that's not as funny, but it's interesting, called Comrade or Comrade from the 40s as well, by a writer called F.O. Mannin, who was an anarchist, really famous writer back in the day. You know, she wrote like probably 70 or 80 books, if you look her up, M-A-N-N-I-N. This particular novel is about this, basically this Irish peasant basically being cultivated and adopted by like a middle-class communist who discovers him in Ireland one day and decides to bring him back to London. And it's basically just an excuse for Mannin to just do this kind of like political tour of the left in London in the 1940s. And she does mention the party, again, you know, being an anarchist at the time, she obviously got some stick from the SPGB and she gives it back in return. It's not as good as the Return of Karl Marx book, unfortunately, but it's just really interesting. It's just like a wee window into the left in the 40s. And that kind of reminds me just one more writer from that period, and her books are actually being republished. A writer called Margarita Hatlaski, I think she was a niece of Harold Lasky, some people might have heard of, and she wrote these really kind of like funny political novels in the 40s called Love and the Super Tax and Toasted English, which I believe have been republished recently by Persephone Press. And again, it's just this very light political, you know, tour of London in the 40s. You know, I mean, maybe it's just me that's into this sort of stuff, but, you know, it's something that else adds to the list. Okay, that's me done.
Thanks, Darren. They sound really good. Yeah, if you can find any links to any of those, certainly put them up. And I'll collect any kind of links that anyone can find to any books that are online or free or whatever, and I'll incorporate them into the overall list. So that could be great. We're getting some really good suggestions here. Well, Steve, I was a bit surprised that you mentioned Lord of the Flies, actually. Most people would have said that was a supremely anti-socialist book.
Yeah, you obviously didn't hear what I said, because I said in context of this the ban on anti-capitalist material being taught in schools. This is absolutely pro-capitalist, and it's the most insidious form of propaganda to be feeding to 13-year-olds, as it was to me in my school. That was the point. Not this to be recommended. It's just to be aware of the sort of the cultural indoctrination that goes on in the name of literature.
I mean, a lot of the flies eating. Roman Catholic, I think, Golding or whatever, he got the Nobel Prize. But, I mean, I think he was right at the time. You know, the Holocaust had just came out and things, and you had the, you know, the World War and things. So it was a bleak time, and he had a bleak view of human nature, a Catholic view of human nature, original sin and all that. And that's what he did with the kids, you know. So I think you have to understand it in context or whatever,
yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I tell you who else that makes me think of, another Catholic writer with quite a bleak view, was what's his name that wrote A Clockwork Orange? Marvellous little book, really quite short book.
William Burroughs.
He wasn't William Burroughs, no.
Wasn't he?
Anthony Burgess.
Anthony Burgess,
of course he was.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, just superb. Sorry, I didn't mean yeah like that. Yeah, superb little book, but yeah, deeply pessimistic about human behaviour or human nature.
Umberto Eco? Eco in the Name of the Rose?
Okay. Why is that a good socialist book, then, do you think, Jacqueline?
Not necessarily good for socialism. It's a damn good read.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If anyone's sort of interested in literary works which mention the SPGB, there's also two books by Ken MacLeod, science fiction writer who used to hang around the party for a little bit. He wrote two books, one called The Cassini Division and the other one called The Stone Canal, in which the SPGB is mentioned.
Which planet were we on, Richard?
He mentions being in Hyde Park and seeing two old pensioners hanging around with a young punk girl with purple hair and ripped jeans, and he goes up to them and they turn out to be the SPGB. He also tells the story about the the SPGBs, by their sort of tactic of persuading people one at a time, then unlike Lenin's 500 years, it would take the world population 20 million years to get socialism. So he did like to take the piss out of us a bit.
Right, as at least two of you have broken the taboo by mentioning Communist Manifesto and Conditions of the Working Class, I've got to stand up for Das Kapital, Volume 1. I don't, in terms of the historical parts. I mean, what you were saying before, Paddy, about some of the strong writing that Marx shows, I mean, some of that stuff is so absolutely powerful. And it's not a historical text. It's absolutely current, as we've come across just recently when we talk about the conditions that people are working under in Leicester, and which would equally apply to Bangladesh, Mumbai, and places like that. So I don't think we should apologise for putting forward Marx as a jolly good read.
Can I mention a book called Notes from the End of History, The Post-War Left in Wales? A bit local, that, to me. But it's by a writer called Philip Bounds, who was a party sympathiser. I say was because, sadly, he died very recently, just two or three months ago, very young, in his early 50s. And Philip was a lifelong, what can I say, radical, if you like, who very much admired the party, though he was never a member. But he became interested in matters political in his teenage years and attended several meetings of Swansea branch of the SPGB, which he recalls in a chapter of that book entitled In the House of Marx. He was a truly brilliant writer, utterly readable. He once came to a branch meeting and we went to the pub afterwards for a drink. And his partner at the time said, Philip has just finished the manuscript of a book that's going to be published. He was very modest. He didn't say that, she did. Would you like to read it? I said, yes. And so they sent me a copy online the following morning, and it's about 150 pages. I read it in one fell swoop. It really was absolutely riveting. So that's Notes from the End of History published by Merlin Press and written by Philip Bound. Written about 10 years ago, by the way.
Hello there. Can you hear me okay? I don't know if there's still the sound problems.
Well, I can, yeah.
maybe if I could suggest a book. It's I've got my copy in front of me because I'll need it to pronounce the writer's name. It's called Everything Was Forever Until It Was No More. Subtitled The Last Soviet Generation by a chap called Alexei Yurchak. And it's a non-fiction book about how the Soviet Union collapsed, but it doesn't take the sort of the economic history or political history side of things. It's more of a sort of a cultural or sort of with a bit of psychology in there as well. And his his main argument in the book is that the sort of the grounds for the Soviet Union to collapse were partly to do with sort of paradoxes in how the system was sort of accepted by the populace. And one example of that is that everyone sort of follows the rules, but at the same time knows that the rules are pointless, but, you know, no one ever really speaks openly about it. And I think it's relevant to socialists, not just as a piece of history, but also as to what the mood of society might be like before a socialist revolution. In the, in the book, of course, he can write with a sort of hindsight of how things happened. But yeah, I think it also sort of points towards the future. In that, if there was a mood where, you know, everyone realised that the system was at fault, and, you know, had sort of class consciousness, then yeah, for a time things would become a sort of even more of a ritual than they are now. You know, the practices of buying and selling, employment. And so, as well as the sort of structural changes, he would examine the change of mood, in that everyone would realize that they're playing, you know, a game, going through the motions without really believing it. So, yeah, I think that's sort of interesting, as I say, not just sort of for its historical value, but as to how the mood of society might be before, you know, before a revolution gains momentum.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, cracking title as well.
Hi, mate. Did he talk about the press or what? I mean, a lot of historians argue if they had kept a tight rein on the press in Russia, it might not have collapsed or whatever, you know. I don't know. Just some history buffs were saying that kind of thing, you know, pointing to China and saying, you know, they control the media, you know.
I think he not just the way the press was monitored, but, you know, sort of culture overall. He talks about how people found ways around it, such as underground newspapers or people making their own record presses. One anecdote which sticks with me is how people made vinyl records, you know, using bootleg recordings of Beatles or Rolling Stones songs, but made out of X-ray plates. So a whole load of 7-inch records out there with X-rays of people's bones, because the plastic is, you know, similar to that of vinyl. But yeah, I suppose. But yeah, my point was, yeah, people found ways round the official repression.
Looks like we're maybe done, Paddy.
Nicola, I noticed you were still on system mute, so just taking you off. I don't know if you wanted to have anything to say in this conversation, or anybody else. Hi, Nicola.
Yeah. Hiya.
Hi. Hiya.
Sorry for the noise earlier.
No worries.
Getting in and out of the car and stuff. No books to add. I don't know if anyone mentioned Le Guin. I really like Ursula Le Guin. Books, always a different way of looking at society and how it's formed.
I did mention Dispossessed. Were there any others that you thought were worth reading?
Well, The Left Hand of Darkness, I think, is the best. No, other than that, I've got nothing to add, but thanks, because I've got a lot of ideas for a new reading list. So cheers and thanks.
Well, as I say, I'll be posting the list up actually when I've just sort of organised it a little bit. So yeah, people don't need to be scribbling away notes, because I won't lose anything.
Brilliant, thanks.
Not to agree with that one about left hand down. I mean, quite a lot of people probably don't know that one here tonight. But it's an absolutely banging science fiction work, but really it deals with humanity. It's not like shoot 'em up cowboys and Indians in space. It's absolutely astonishingly thoughtful piece of writing. Extremely, extremely.
Okay, anybody else?
I've just realised nobody's mentioned Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, which I think is a really interesting read, because it actually gives a perspective on the development of capitalism in the US, which I don't think you really get anywhere else. You know, it's very much a grassroots, bottom-up, working-class look at US history. And there's also Marx in Soho as well, which is actually a play where Marx is sort of reincarnated in Soho, but actually sort of the heavenly bureaucracy get mixed up. So instead of being reincarnated in Soho in London, where he lived, he gets reincarnated in the United States, and he gets drunk with what's his name, anarchist
Bakunin.
Bakunin comes around and he gets drunk, and they have a fight. They end up wrestling on the floor. As hearted, but quite a fun little piece.
Is that one Howard Zinn as well?
That's Howard Zinn, yeah. Marx and Soho. You can actually get the performance on tape, on CD. So it shows how old I am. On CD, Marx and Soho. And the other thing that's going through my head was a writer I don't actually like, but I know a lot of people do like him. Science fiction writer Ian Banks and his Culture series. He writes, there's about 10 in the series in which he writes about a post-scarcity society of the future. A range of books with a range of themes, but all based on this idea that sometime in the very distant future, when mankind has kind of come in contact with other species from other parts of the universe, there's no longer any scarcity. So we're talking about an egalitarian society and how it functions. It doesn't sound much like, so some good ideas, isn't it?
Can you hear me again? Yeah, I think I dropped out earlier. I suppose if we're talking about science fiction, maybe The Machine Stops by E.M. Forster. It was written in 1909, but it says a lot about social media, funnily enough, and the internet. The setting is far in the future, where everyone is hooked up to what we would now see as the internet, and everything's sort of provided electronically, including communication. People are very shut off, and one of the characters realizes that this is distancing people from each other. Sort of makes an effort to sort of break free. And there's a lot in there about the alienating potential of, the online life. Written well over 100 years ago. So it stands out for that, stands out in that way. So, I'd recommend The Machine Stops, Ian Forster.
I think it's
thumbs up for that, Mike. One of my favourites. Brilliant book. Short story, actually.
Short story, yeah.
Fahrenheit 451 or 452 or 415? The one about the books that people read?
Ray Bradbury.
That's it. Couldn't remember his name. Yeah, I've got the DVD. Excellent.
Here, here. Yeah, I agree.
What's the kind of socialist message there, do you think? Or is there one? Or just the idea that it's not a good idea to go around burning books, I suppose.
Yeah, that would be what we'd take on it. And, yeah, I mean, it's quite an authoritarian society overall, from what I remember, quite ordered and structured, I suppose, the book burning and, suppression of knowledge,
But the fireman, he actually joins them in the end, the ones he's been hunting down, and starts taking books himself.
I remember when I was a really little kid being afraid of firemen because I thought they went around starting fires. And I discovered a long time later that this was because my mum had told me the story of Fahrenheit 451 and I sort of got the message a bit wrong.
If I could chip in with a third one, I don't know if we've got a maximum number each. Hang on, I'll just lean over to where my bookshelf is. It's The Atheist Guide to Reality by Alex Rosenberg. And I think he makes a lot of mistakes in the book, but he says that if you have an atheist materialist point of view on life, it leads to determinism. In that, his argument is that if you can trace everything to physical cause and effect, that leads to a sort of deterministic chain, so that there's no such thing as free will. And he's saying that this comes as a direct consequence of a materialist explanation of what the universe is all about. So it's one of those books where his starting point would be similar to ours in many ways, and how he takes it off in a direction that is quite troubling. So yeah, reading it, you try and sort of argue against him in your head. But yeah, it's very well thought through and very sort of rational in a cold way. But it's quite sort of a challenging read because, as I say, you're finding ways to disagree with it.
Well, looking at the list that I've got that people have mentioned, there looks to be about 30 items on it, not including the 10 I offered originally. So that's potentially quite an impressive reading list we've just compiled tonight. And here's the kicker for anybody who's suggested one. I'm going to be contacting you because you suggested the book, asking you to give a bit of blurb about the book that you've recommended and say why you recommend that socialists or proto-socialists ought to read it. So there you go. I didn't drop that in before because I thought nobody would say anything. So I'm going to do that. I think that's a really good constructive evening's work. So well done, everybody.
Thanks, Paddy.
Thanks, Paddy.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks. Yeah, and thanks for the homework as well.